It's time for the Fantasy Football Guys with off-season updates and next season guesses. Here they are, Lyle Conkeel and Kevin Moore, the Fantasy Football Guys.
Yep, that's right. We're the Fantasy Football Guys, Kevin.
Lyle.
And it is off-season. Like, this is like the worst time of the off-season.
It's so bad. At least before free agency, we can speculate on stuff.
Right. Now, free agency is pretty much over. You got a couple of guys.
Combine's gone.
Sue just got signed.
Oh, where'd he go? I didn't see that.
Rams.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Great.
They're building a powerhouse out there, apparently. Yeah. So also, the whole thing in the news right now is, you know, is Beckham going to get traded by the Giants?
No.
Is somebody going to give him two number ones? And
no,
they're
not going to trade their best player. That would shock me.
It would be ridiculous.
If they're in rebuild mode, maybe. You know, we could speculate there a little bit. Teams generally don't like it when people threaten to hold out. But he hasn't done anything yet.
Well, you know, it's also difficult to find a trade partner when, you know, he wants to be the best paid wide receiver in the league.
Yeah.
And he's not going to step on the field until he has that contract.
I'm sure somebody, one of the 31 other teams, would be willing to roll those dice.
The Browns.
Oh, dude, do it.
Can you imagine Beckham on one side and Gordon on the other?
I would love to have him out of the NFC.
Jarvis Landry in the slot.
Oh, that would be pretty sick. They'd find a way to screw it up, though. They will find a way.
They'd all get hurt on a boat trip somewhere.
Yeah.
You know,
they will figure out how to mess it up.
Team building excursion. They all, the boat,
yep,
you know.
And Gordon's got a bong on him and, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And Manziel's the backup.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, so we kind of have a special thing going today. You've heard us talk over the past couple of weeks, and you've seen our tweets. If you follow us on Twitter, that would be at TFFG, by the way. You have seen that we're kind of touting the FCFL. That would be the Fan-Controlled Football League. And we have an interview today. Now, it may be a little clunky here because we recorded it earlier and then we're recording this after.
Right.
And, you know, we're always transparent with you guys. And we screw things up. We tell you. So,
yeah, but we recorded it like a half hour ago.
Right. So I mean, literally.
Yeah.
Between a bathroom trip for me, we finished it, and now we're doing it.
You could have left that part out.
Yeah. It was a good bathroom trip, though. Yeah,
I remember you saying so.
It was.
You were very pleased about
refreshing,
the
refreshing, if you will.
The result, let's say.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's get right down to it. With us now is the man himself, Ray Austin. He's the commissioner of the new Fan-Controlled Football League. Ray, how are you?
I am awesome. I'm sitting outside of my gym. Got you guys first, and then I'm about to go beat this gym like he owes me money.
That's the way you should do it, right?
I wish I could approach it that way.
That's right. Now, that's your gym, right? You have that gym, right?
No, this one's not mine. Me and my wife actually just moved out to Arizona. I had one that was actually in Chicago in the northwest suburbs, and we trained a ton of athletes out in that way. Actually, some pro guys, Justin Tuck, Tommy Zbikowski, Tony Milwaukee. So yeah, it was a great experience. I totally enjoyed it. That was the first thing I jumped into after playing football.
That's a good deal. Let's talk about playing football for you. You grew up in Lawton, Oklahoma. And from Lawton, you went to Eisenhower, right? In Lawton,
there you go. Yeah, that's pretty good. Actually, I'm gonna rewind you just a little bit more because my dad, I was a military brat, so I grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina. But we were all over the place traveling, and I ended up in Hawaii.
Ooh.
And that's where I actually learned, you know, play football. And I actually went to a school called Leilua, which when I was a freshman, Adrian Morrell was my running back.
Wow.
Yeah. So pause that. We'll go back to that. But I ended up moving to Oklahoma, and I couldn't have been blessed with a better place to play football. That team at that time was number two in the country in the USA Today national polls. I came on the team as a sophomore. There was about 10 Division I players on that team. I end up becoming the outside, like, rover linebacker on a number two team in the country. We end up winning, and we were the number one team in the U.S. at that time. So we won a state championship and a national championship my sophomore year.
Wow.
That's pretty good. That'll get you some D1 looks,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, some people, yeah, definitely be checking you out at that point.
So you chose.
It was surreal to see, Division One colleges at our practices every day. It was mind blowing.
Yeah, I can imagine. So you probably had your choice of places to go, and you chose Tennessee. What was it about Tennessee that floated them to the top?
Well, that's funny because they didn't recruit me, and that is exactly the biggest reason why I went there. I had gotten scholarship offers from everybody, from Florida State. Nebraska was number one at the time. Tom Osborne was the head coach.
Right.
And one of my good friends, Mike Mentor, that played for the Carolina Panthers, he went to the opposite school that I went to in Lawton. He went to Nebraska, and he wanted me to go there with him. And I just couldn't do it. But I was going to actually go to Florida State. But I always liked Tennessee, and I never got a letter from them. So that really upset me. So my counselor at the time, and I know some of your listeners may not even know what this is, but she was the only one that had two VCRs.
Right.
So I took two VCRs, wired them together, made a highlight tape, the first ever highlight tape, and I sent it to the University of Tennessee, wrapped it with a rubber band, and said, "My name's Ray Austin. I'm an All-American. Check out my tape." Boom. And that was on the Christmas break. When I got back, Coach Foreman was in the office the next week. Like, we didn't even have to go this far to find a good player. We thought we'd lose you to an Oklahoma or a Texas or a Nebraska. And I was like, no, I'd love to play for Tennessee. So I literally canceled a visit to go to Tennessee on the last visit. And in that visit, on that day, was myself, Leonard Little, Jay Graham, Brandon Astley was actually an All-American too, and there was one more guy, Ward Dunn, was in that in that visitation. Yeah.
Wow.
And everybody signed, of course, except for Ward Dunn. So,
right. Yeah.
That's how I got to Tennessee, and I was one of the first Tennessee recruits to ever play for Tennessee, and now there's like a pipeline from Tennessee to Oklahoma. If you look at some of the guys, Robert Meacham, Jonathan Brown, Marcus Nash, have all come out of there after that.
Wow, you were like you led the way. You were the point
pioneer.
Of the spear, as it were. Yeah. So you got
it was tough to get out of Oklahoma, but at that time, and just to wrap that around a little bit more, at that time, a little scat back at a 2 or 3A school by the name of James Allen, that played for the Chicago Bears with me. we were going to go to high school together. He actually called me and said, "Man, if we went there, it'd be a great, we'd be a great start." And I just couldn't do it.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great to have those choices though. So you're at Tennessee, and Vols football's a religion there, to be sure. I mean, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but hey, you were there with Peyton Manning, right?
Yeah. Actually, I was there before Peyton. Peyton's a year younger. Heath Shuler was actually the first quarterback there.
Right.
And people don't even know this. Behind Heath Shuler was Todd Helton, the awesome baseball player. So,
wow. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I get there, and, I mean, it was like rock stars already because these guys were already All-Americans. You know, Heath Shuler, Charlie Garner, James Stewart. All these guys, Corey Fleming. I mean, all these guys are headed to get drafted, and you end up landing on this team and starting as a freshman. I mean, playing in Tennessee is, if you haven't seen a game there, you're missing out on college football. Tennessee's fans and Tennessee's environment of that old traditional college football that I think we all remember and miss, that's there. It was when I walked through that stadium and I saw all those fans, I was just like, this is it. This is home, man. I'm going to spend the next 4 years of my life, playing for this school. So it was, and at that time, and then you grow up and see a guy like, to watch a young guy like Peyton Manning, go up in the ranks and be the, the athlete he was, and to be the student athlete. I think it was the biggest thing that I got out of Peyton was how much he was in the classroom from the time we was there. I was a big guy in the film room, and he beat me to the room. And
wow.
I knew in practice, going up against all the guys. There's a drill, there's a defensive drill called one-on-one, and it's it's man against man. It's when the scouts, you know, pick up their boards and they come over and watch this drill. And you're going up against Peyton Manning every day. You're going up against an all-American wide receivers every day. There's no way that you cannot be ready for Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So was he, and we all saw him in Peyton in the NFL. You know, being the guy who basically had the entire playbook in his head. I'm sure that wasn't just as soon as he hit the league. He was that way at Tennessee, too, right?
I mean, think about who he was trained under. I mean, Cutcliffe was a genius. I mean, he couldn't have gotten a better quarterback coach. He's still going back to Cut. You know, right. That's how he still to this day goes back and trains with Cut. And that just shows you that the mentorship there. But, yeah, he was that guy that was all, you know, Peyton was that guy that you think that, you know, yeah, he's a guy's guy. He's a locker room guy. He's the student, and the student is the thing that impressed me the most. I mean,
right.
You know, he'd be the last one to leave the gym, but he wasn't doing anything. But you know, he's probably in there talking to the trainers. But when he gets out, you know, he's right in the watching film. I mean, it was a really great thing to see. You always knew that he was definitely going to be prepared.
Kind of lifts the whole team up to get to that example, right?
Yeah.
He did. I mean, it was my senior year. He was the He was the only junior that was a team captain. He was the offensive team captain. I was the defensive team captain. Jay Graham and Leonard Little were the other two. And we were the four team captains, but he was the only one out of us that was a junior. So, you know, you got to take – I mean, he led by example. He was throwing after practice. You know, if he stays out, you staying out.
Right.
You know, that was the guy – you could tell he was preparing himself for something else. And you can tell the guys in college that are preparing themselves for the league. Some guys are playing ball just to try to make it. Then there's guys that are preparing themselves for the league.
They know they're going to make it, and they want to make it big. All right, I got you.
Absolutely. Well, they want to be prepared. They're when I think of Mark Jackson, and I see, you know, all the great things he's doing and trying to elevate his game by reaching out to coaches and stuff like that. I think that's incredible. That's when you know guys are really going to be students of the game and preparing themselves to be great.
Yeah, gotcha. So at the end of the 96 season, before 97, Bill Parcells leaves the Patriots, gets hired by the Jets. And he brings Belichick with him, and just happens that you get drafted in the fifth round that year to the Jets. So your first exposure to the NFL as a coach, from a coaching standpoint, was Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells. Yeah. What was that like?
Welcome to the NFL.
I have to say this. First of all, and start from my even high school, I have been blessed by the football universe to be and just have so many great coaches. I had an all-state coach in Hawaii, Leilua. I had an all-state coach at Tennessee, a high school coach Reynolds. We went to, you got Coach Fulmer, our national championship coach. Lovey Smith was my defensive back coach at the time. And then I get to the NFL, and my defensive coordinator, defensive back coach is Bill Tech. I don't know. You tell me. What do you think my football experience has been? I've just been blessed to have some really great teachers and see what real good coaches are, and I have to say I played with the Chicago Bears at some times and when the coaching wasn't that good, but
right.
You know, when being in New York, being with Bill was and I was drafted by Belichick, and that's what, you know, and it's funny you know you bring that up, because it was like the temptations of coaching at that time. It was Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick, Al Groh, Charlie Weiss, Todd Kelly, Eric Mangini, Romeo, all on the same coaching staff.
Wow, and that's a huge tree.
yeah, it was a lot of just, it was a lot of, you know, cooks in the kitchen and guys trying to, you know, make their ways up and, you know, be the next guy. And, you know, it was, you could tell there was a little friction there with that team, you know, but it was so many great coaches ready to just do their own thing. But
right.
I came in, I was the fifth and James Ferrier was the first. And every Tuesday we had to watch film with Bill after practice, and it was incredible. It was just like, man, you're watching film like with Bill Belichick and really getting to understand the coaching, and that's what I really understood football from a different, you know, perspective. You know, most guys get into the league and they know their position, and they may know another position sort of kinda. But Bill puts you in a place and says, man, you're here. If you don't know your position, you shouldn't even be here. I'm not trying to teach you your position. You need to know what everybody else is doing because it makes your job that much better. So if you really think about the really good players in the league, they're the students. They're the Ed Reeds. They're the ones that know everything. He knows where the end is supposed to be. He can come down from the hash and tap the defensive end to put him in the right hash and run back because he knows he understands the entire defense. That's the type of coaching that, you know, Belichick has.
So, you know, the word genius has been thrown around about the guy. I mean, you were in there in the trenches with him. I mean, would you apply that word to him?
I think he comes to as close to a football, you know, expert that they, and when you hear people talk, you can tell that they're experts of this game. You know, the John Grudens and the Bill Belichick. When you hear him speak, you don't even have to speak. You just he shows it for a coach to be able to transform so many different teams. And I know they want to give it a lot of credit to Tom Brady, but you know it takes. And they always say that putting teams together is very, very difficult. Look at what they do in basketball. They have to try to have a big three to win a championship. I mean, he understands that I don't always have to have a big three. I got a good football player here.
Right.
This guy right here is key. And that's what makes him so good. He can bring a lot more out of a player than most coaches does. He has a broader range of how he looks at a player.
Gotcha. And you know, obviously he's had success doing that year after
A little bit, Kevin. Yeah,
a few years he's done all right by himself.
He's been okay.
So you played free safety with the Jets, right? And you played strong safety with the Bears for a couple of years, 98-99. Greg Schiano, who was a head coach for a while, was your DB coach in Chicago, right?
Yeah. Greg was great. Greg, you know, Greg was young. He was really getting his feet wet. He had a really great defensive back staff that I thought, you know, it was. But they were very young, you know, with Walt Harris. But you had, you know, the really great strong safety Marty Carter, which to me I think does not get enough respect in the NFL. I mean, he is one of the most underrated. Safeties that plays the game. I mean, he was a student of the game. When I keep saying that, and I keep expressing that because I think people need to understand there's a strategy to football that's being kind of diluted a little bit with fantasy, and I think people have to understand there is a strategy to this. It's great to have great players, but you have to really understand the game of football. And, you know, Bill or Marty was a great guy for that. And Tony Ferris, who I played behind. So, and Greg was great. He just we were just young at the time. And
right.
He kind of just, you know, we had a lot going on. Wonstadt was trying to get the team together. It was really going through a lot of, when I got to Chicago at the time, they were going through a lot of changes at that time.
Gotcha. And then you played in the XFL, which was kind of the Wild West back then, as I recall it. And in 2001, you played for the Chicago Enforcers. What was that like?
It was like, I played for the Chicago Enforcers? Really, what happened? I woke up one day and checked the internet. So everybody, you know, some of my old teammates said, man, you need to check the internet. You're on this team. And I saw it, and I was just like, you know what, I just got out of, you know, with the Packers, and that didn't, you know, end like I wanted it. And I said, well, why not, you know? And I have to say, it was one of the most fun. It was one of the funnest experiences I had in a long time, and it's not because of the XFL. It was the players. I think the player pool that we had was exceptional. I think the product on the field was great. I think what was around the product was a lot of distraction, a lot of dilution, and then a lot of people. I think if they would have just said, "Hey, this is football," it would have lasted. So the XFL would probably have still been able to make it with right. you know some changing and some of the things they did. But it was just kind of thrown together. It was like splat. Here's this awesome thing that we're gonna do with guys running around and cliffhanging, and none of that was talked about. None of that stuff was talked about in the league. No, we were like, no, we gotta start practicing, putting together a game plan. And that's when, if you really look at the XFL, the first three or four games, it was very tacky. It was a lot of teams were out of sync. It was because guys just weren't. They were just trying to right. find their footing, and they were trying to. You know, we all got kind of thrown together in Florida for training camp for 2 weeks, and then boom, and we just then began a league at that time. So, but the great thing I like, you know, the one thing about the XFL that you know playing in it. You know, it gave me a lot of things that I kind of consumed from it, which helped me out in the future. You know, I thought they, you know, one of the best things about the XFL, if you think about players there, you can't think about anybody except for one guy, and his name is He Hate Me. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It was a great way to produce an exposure in that way, and it worked for him. And we all thought it was stupid, but now – the only person that you can connect to with the XFL is He Hate Me. So
yeah, nobody remembers time, Rod Smart. Everybody remembers He Hate Me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was brilliant. He was the only one that did it. Yeah. It was a couple of the guys that did it, but he was brilliant by doing it.
I mean, it's funny because this last year in a fantasy league I was in, somebody named their team He Hate Me. It's like, really?
Yeah. I mean, almost 2 decades on.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's
great. That's awesome.
So the things that you learned and saw what that league was doing wrong and some of the things they did right kind of led you to being the commissioner of the Fan-Controlled Football League, right? You've seen it done well in some ways and not so well in others, and I'm sure that informs the decisions you make in your new spot, right?
It really does. It showed me that, you know, you've got all these football leagues popping up now. I mean – what is it? We're just going to keep regurgitating the same thing that we see on Saturdays and Sundays. Where's the innovation of football? And I think that's what these leagues are missing. And that was the one thing that actually could have propelled XFL to stay in the running. But that's where we are. The FCFL is what we're doing. The Fan Control Football League is the only league that's allowing the fans to have complete control over the organization, and that's what we want to do. And we are ahead of the game, putting the entire league on the blockchain. So I'm super excited because I, with the understanding and the knowledge I had with the XFL on top of my professional time, I know the product that we're going to put on the field is going to be exceptional. The technology is going to be not only exceptional, but it's going to be so fast forwarding that we will be the future of what sports will be.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. So for those that are listening that aren't totally familiar with what the Fan Control Football League is, can you give them a basic synopsis of the overall picture of what the league is and also how they can participate?
Yeah, give us the elevator speech, man.
Yeah, good pitch.
We're rethinking the football for the digital age and for the future of sports. So I'm going to kind of rewind a little bit. 2016, me and my partners, Grant Cohen, Sarafi, our CEO, and Pat Dees, we bought an indoor football team in the Indoor Football League, the IFL. And we allowed the fans to run it. So we allowed the fans to pick our location. They picked Salt Lake City, Utah. Texas was second. We also let them pick our name. They picked the Screaming Eagles. Teamy McTeam Face was number 2.
Teamy McTeam Face,
right?
You gotta love the internet,
and,
man.
And, this was my favorite. And Stormin' Mormons was number
2. Oh, that would have been perfect.
I know. I said the same thing. But anyway, we then allowed our fans to pick our coach. So I had a dozen live interviews with coaches, indoor football coaches, and we allowed the fans to pick what coach they wanted to coach our team. And then we use platforms like YouTube and Huddle to allow fans to send us links of players all around the world that they thought could play for our team. And I also ran a national combine in a few different cities, and we uploaded all the footage and allowed our fans to see them, and we picked our rosters based off what our fans wanted. And if you take it to the next level, we then developed a mobile app that allows our fans at home or in the stadium to call the plays in real time and see the results on the field.
So that all happened. That was your proof of concept test.
Yep.
Last year, right? This
yep.
wasn't.
So,
yeah, this is yep. just this, recently.
This was in 2017. So here we go. We were 6-11. All right, new franchise
right.
with this awesome technology going up against other coaches and other players. We were 6-11. The fans had the third top offense in the IFL.
Wow.
We had the third top offense in the IFL. The fans. And then the quarterback that the fans chose on the internet, he was the rookie of the year.
Wow, that's great.
So now we have proven the concept that fans can not only organize a team, pick a coach, draft players, call plays, design a team. That was on the football side. Now you take it on the executive side. We had a great situation. I won't say a great situation, not for everybody, but it was an amazing experience. Former All-Pro Greg Hardy reached out to his agent, reached out to my CEO Sohrab Farooti and myself, and he wanted to reignite his football career. He kept seeing all the awesome exposure we were getting: Fortune, Forbes, GQ, ESPN, Partly Eruptions. We were everywhere, New York Times, and he said, you know what? Maybe we can use this to catapult you to get back in the league. Some of our founders were like, that'd be a great idea. The exposure will be awesome. And some of the others was like, I don't know. I don't think that's a good idea for us. And then we said, you know, if we're going to be sincere to the brand, let's put the vote up for the fans.
Right.
So on one end, you got people calling, calling in, tweeting in, man, look, man, it's just football. Let the man play. That happened 3 years ago, whatever.
Right.
Indoor football, who cares? And then on the other end, you had people uploading the picture of the girl he assaulted. So
right.
Then you start seeing the business and the moral compass of where our fans were. Bottom line, at the end of the night, 51% chose that he couldn't play for our team. So then we just proved that fans could make an executive decision that NFL, NBA teams have to make on a daily basis. What if my cornerback gets a DUI? What if my running back gets a domestic violence suit? How do we deal with that? I know what the NFL and NBA do. They don't let the fans have anything to say about it.
Right.
But in our league, with the Fan Control Football League, our fans will be able to make those type of decisions when we have those things that come up.
Yeah, so basically, and really, it's the fans calling the local radio stations, et cetera, and the media complaining about the decision. Now, in your league, they can't complain about it because they voted on it.
Absolutely. And this is and going back to the football side, this is a real life video game. We are treating this like a real life video. You know how you can play one of the games on your phone and you're getting tokens and you're earning points.
Right.
That's how you create power and equity in our ecosystem. So if you want to gain power, you have to get fan tokens, and our fan tokens can be earned. You earn our fan tokens by sharing our footage, liking our content, reading our content, coming to our meetings. I have weekly meetings with the fan scouts when we talk about new players, and the more you're involved in the ecosystem, the more you're earning fan tokens. You can purchase them as well, but we want you to spend time in our ecosystem. We want this to be almost like a part-time job. I leave my full-time job and then I click in to the Fan Control Football League, and I'm now the executive GM making decisions on what's the next quarterback I'm going to bring in on the team.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds awesome.
And the fan tokens are blockchain based, right?
Yeah,
it's like an Ethereum type. Yeah.
So we have a ERC-20 token. It's on an Ethereum blockchain, and I'm gonna bring up a great reason why we did that. So going back to the Greg Hardy situation, so the 51% said that we don't want him on the team. Well, we woke up the next morning. The 49% was wanting to burn the house down. Like, come on, man, that was rigged. You guys, that was BS. You guys did all that for publicity, and that's not what happened at all. And so we said, you know what? If we put every vote on the blockchain now, then that means that everything is transparent. And the blockchain is a digital ledger of that everybody can see. So now everybody knows that every vote that comes in is transparent. Everybody sees it, and they know that, you know what, my decision really matters.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
Yeah, I love the fact that fan tokens can be bought, and the fact that they can be earned. Now the question is, how many fan tokens does it take to do certain things? Like, say you want to vote on a team's name, how many fan tokens would that be?
And that will fluctuate during the day. So that's something we're still adjusted, and that's going to adjust through the day, but during the week. So every time big decisions come up, you know, it might take more fan tokens to be involved in that one, or it might be like, hey, what do we do about this? And then it might take the smaller one. So, but the bigger decisions that we have, it'll definitely be a different price.
Right, like, you know, play calling and things like that. I mean, you don't want to have to sell your house to call plays on a week, a game.
Absolutely. But if you want to say, man, I want to do 10 tokens and have more say on this play, then right. Absolutely. Then you get more power to that fan.
I see. So you can pay more tokens to have your choice rise to the top.
And it's like a weighted thing? Nice.
Exactly. And think about that. Not every fan is created equal. We know that. You know, you've got 100,000 people watching the game. You've got different levels of expertise sitting in the stadium. But this is a different fan now, which is what I love. I remember back in the day when I was, you know, playing football, when I was a kid, you know, I didn't know what was going on, but everything was exciting. My dad was screaming. I'm a scream. So nowadays it's a different fan. We're every 15 minutes, we're rebooting and resetting our phone to see our fantasy stats.
15 minutes.
Every time we see a bad play, we tweet about it or we Facebook about it. We are connected to both our mobile phone and our live sporting event. And that's what the FCFL is going to be. I mean, when you come into our stadium, you know, we're going to take the whole league now to Vegas, and we're going to allow the fans to develop the next seven teams. And with the one team we have now, and have an eight league team in Vegas, and they will all play in one stadium. It'll be a very interactive type of warehouse, almost kind of like a studio audience, because, you know, we do have an audience that's coming to the game, but our fans are our digital guys. So we want to capture them. We want to make sure that when they see it on our stream, that it's an incredible event, and they can see the excitement from the drones being flew by. Last year, all of our games were shot on drones. So when you saw the game, you saw it like you saw Madden.
Wow.
And you can also see the vertical view as well. And we're talking about cameras on the on certain players, some players being mic'd. Man, one of the greatest moments we had was when we scored the first touchdown and everybody ran on the field holding their phone like, dude, I called that play. And then after the game, you got the fan, little kid going up to the player going up to the little kid saying, yo, thanks for calling my play, man. Like, you will never get that type of engagement in professional sports right now.
Right. No, if you went on the field, you'd get arrested.
Yeah. You know? You'll get tackled.
That's a problem.
Well, we almost all did. But it was awesome. It was awesome, though. It was great.
So let's talk about the actual gameplay itself for a minute. It's not going to be 11-on-11. It's going to be 7-on-7, right?
Exactly. I mean, it's indoor football, and we want that fast-paced 7-on-7.
Is
look.
There
I mean,
a
know,
catch rule?
You're not exactly, and you're not recreating football. You know, right now, one of the hottest sports leagues right now is just that everyone's getting involved in. It's 7-on-7. It's going all the way down to intermediate school, you know, flag football, you know, flag football to 7-on-7 in high school. Every high school, college, and professional team does 7-on-7 every week during their practice. So it's a traditional part of football. It's a simple part of football. And I think now making it 7-on-7, you make it very easier for our global audience to understand football easier. I mean, we had over 100 different countries engaging with the team in Utah. So imagine now when we have eight different teams, you know, the global capacity of football fans that are going to be able to interact with us.
I'm just hoping that one of those other teams actually is Teamy McTeamface.
Yes.
I'll be ecstatic.
I will be a lifelong fan of Teamy McTeamface.
I want the t-shirt. I want the mug.
Yeah.
So one thing that really intrigued me about the game format is, you know, it's a one-hour game. You got a five-minute halftime. You're in and out in 60 minutes. No special teams, no kickoffs, no punts. Everything is, you know, you go for it on fourth. You go for two on the touchdowns. I think that's really going to engage some fans.
I mean, that is, again, you're keeping football nice and light. You think about the gamer today. They're in and out. I want that 1 hour fix, and then I'm out. Or if I want to play multiple games that week with us, I can absolutely do it. That's the way we want to set it up. I love the fast pace of it, and the taking the special teams out, you know, that to me, it's us, you know, looking forward to the where, you know, the safety of the players and not trying to have those full type speed collisions like that. But that's one of the great fan ideas that we're like, yeah, fans will want to take that out. Absolutely. Safety, you know, plus taking it out allows the game to be faster. But how awesome would it be? Instead of a two-point conversion, instead of a field goal kick, how awesome would it be if it was quarterback one-on-ones, DB against wide receiver?
That's pretty cool, yeah.
You got to love that, too, as a D-back.
As a D-back, you got to love that.
It's like practice, right?
That right there can be bet on daily. I just want to see the extra point. I'm telling you, one of the most exciting times in practice and one of the most competitive times in practice is the one-on-one drills against wide receiver and DB, because you are getting film, and no DB wants to get on film, getting burnt, and beat practice every day.
Right.
That camera does never lie. So once you do that week, it's going to be taped, and you got to watch it right after practice. So you want to get – that's the craft. That's you working on your craft. That's you understanding what you're working on and doing. So that, to me, is one of the things that people get to see in a replay. Now you're going to get to see it every extra point.
I love it. So this all sounds great, and we're itching to go on this. So when are you anticipating the first season starting for this league?
Next year, 2019, early next year, 2019. We've got some. When I tell you, we've got some phenomenal announcements that are about to come out on representation. Who's going to be our live streaming partner, and who's going to produce our content? When I tell you, when we drop this bomb, everybody will see how legit and how awesome these things are going to be. We're calling what we're doing right now building the SCFL. So we're doing a ton of content. All of our founders are out speaking in speaking engagements. Myself and Grant Cohen are going to be in San Francisco speaking at a convention. Last week I was at the NFLPA convention in Vegas, speaking to the former and current players about the SCFL and about life after football. We're allowing our fans to see us developing all this stuff from the ground up, you know, and we want them to be a part of it. So when we all walk out on that stadium, we felt we were along for this ride the entire time.
Sounds fantastic, man. I mean, we're just peripherally involved, and I'm excited as hell.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting. So, that being said, you know, I'm hooked, and I'm assuming that everybody that's listening to this is hooked. How can they find out more? What's next?
Yes. So you can go to our Telegram. We got over 50,000 people in our Telegram. It is FCFL_fan_token. Or you can go to our website, fantoken.network. And you can see everything. You can see all of our founders. You can see who's on our board of advisors. I mean, Andy Dolich, the former COO of the 49ers. Manish Jha, the former GM of NFL Mobile. Matt Wolf, the VP of Coca-Cola. Matt Iris, the former CMO of FanDuel. Greg Moore, the commissioner of the SIAC, which is all the HBCU colleges that we're going to funnel some of our players from. You'll get to see, you'll get to see the sizzle reel of last year and how awesome the technology looked being played. So you can go, one more time, it's FCFL_fan_token. That's our Telegram. Our website is FCFL.io. And if you want to check out the fan token, go to fantoken.network. And If you want to check me out on social media, I'm RayAustin36 on everything. If you follow me, I absolutely will follow you back, and I appreciate you guys for having me on.
Oh, man, it's been a blast.
It's been a blast. I can't wait to see this go, and I look forward to, as we get closer to launch, to having you back on, and we can get more details going.
Yeah, and for everybody
absolutely,
listening,
man.
I need you.
We make these big announcements next week. I'd love to be back on and talk about how they're going to be influenced through this. I'd love to come back and talk to you guys.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, that'd be great. And for everybody listening, I need you guys to chip in here. We have to have a team named Teamy McTeamface. It's got to happen.
or the Storm and Mormons.
I'll take that too. But Teamy McTeamface is pretty much the best name that's ever happened.
It is.
All right, Ray.
Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, take care.
That was pretty cool.
Dude, I really enjoyed talking to him. And I'm telling you right now, like, it sounds amazing. Teamy McTeamface, come on.
That would have been fantastic. And you know it's going to happen.
It's going to it better happen. I am counting on you, Internet.
Yeah, that's got to happen.
Please.
As soon as it becomes a thing that people know about.
I need a Teamy McTeamface shirt. I need one.
Oh, yeah. And have it be an actual shirt.
Yeah, an actual logo.
It would be great. What would the logo be for Teamy McTeamface?
But I'm in wonder, in awe of the prospects of a Teamy McTeamface logo shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this whole league to me, dude, it seems to me, you know, you see futuristic things like The Running Man, the movie made with Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, with, you know, like
yeah.
dark, you know, lots of lights, and it's very futuristic. And I kind of see this being that same way.
Yeah. They're filming it with drones and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It's sick, dude.
And it's in a studio, and there were a few people in attendance, but mostly everybody's at home
pushing buttons to control the
action.
Voting on the,
dude,
the action.
That's,
yeah,
that's
I would
crazy.
Love to, I'd love to be involved. Yeah.
I won in.
Yeah,
today.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
And we're, you know, it's going to be 2019. Obviously, they have some things to work out. One of the things I saw that they were looking at dealing with is, you know, there's delay on TV.
Right.
You know, but this is going to be internet, so it may not be as much of a delay. But if you're waiting to, you know, if you're watching it at home on your computer and you're trying to call plays, if there's a 15-second delay, that's going to kill the hour
that could be an issue.
So
yeah.
they're going to have to figure that whole thing out. And from what I understand, they've taken steps to do it. So you know there'll be some things they have to deal with. But dude, otherwise,
yeah, it sounds really cool. I mean, it's live action football that you can actually contribute to.
And you know,
do you know what I would give to be able to call Eagles plays?
Like
one, just to be able to vote on one. Do you know what I would have given to be able to call Eagles or vote on Eagles plays during the Andy Reid era?
I would have just been willing to, can we call a timeout here? I'll give you 10 fan tokens to call a goddamn timeout.
Hey guys, can we manage this clock? Spike the ball now.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, or,
you kidding
or,
me?
Yeah, it would have been great.
Yeah.
And just, you know, other things as well. Like, do we get this free agent or don't? Do we pick this guy first? Do we get Danny Watkins, who wants to be a fireman instead of a football player? Do we choose that dude?
Right.
No. Do we take Mike Mamula because
God.
He ran well at the combine?
Good God.
Right. I mean, all those things come into play here, and being able to
do
pick
we
the
pass
uniform
on Reggie Wayne.
Yeah, I want to be
Freddie Ball game.
I want to be, you know, the Pickle Ricks. I want my team to be
the Pickle Ricks.
The Pickle Ricks.
You probably can't do a. A copyrighted or trademarked.
Are you kidding me?
Figure.
They'd love that. Would have that as the team logo?
Maybe.
I mean, you know.
You just can't call it Pickle Rick.
What would you call it?
I don't know. Cucumber Face.
Donnie Dill. Oh, that would be cool. Donnie Dill.
Yeah.
That's right.
I like that. Anyway, it should be a lot of fun, man. I'm excited. And we'll be updating you, you know, a lot along the way in terms of their progress.
Yeah, as we know you will.
But
well.
Be on the lookout for it because it sounds
or
like it's going to be
Teamy McTeamface.
Dope.
I like talking to former NFL players just to kind of get their inside.
Dude, guy played with everybody.
He did. He was mentioning names. It's like, oh, that dude, oh, that
yeah,
dude.
Yeah, dude. Romer Cannell, Mangini, Parcells.
Farrier.
Farrier, freaking Belichick. Like, all those guys were on that staff. Like, what? Are you kidding?
Yeah, it was a dream staff, to be sure. But, like, all alpha dogs. So I imagine there was some tension.
That's
like
what he said. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
No. Yeah. Did you see the I think it was a 30 for 30 or whatever, there was built the two Bills? Parcells and
yes.
Belichick.
Yeah.
Talk
yeah.
about awkward. Yeah. Those two dudes sitting in a room. It's like, yeah.
Now you got two alpha dogs there, man.
Yeah. You know? Two mega alpha dogs.
Yeah. One's more successful than the other, though.
Yeah, the student became the teacher, as
just
it turned out.
Just saying, Bill.
Now, here's the thing, dude. Norwood doesn't miss that kick.
Yeah. Parcells didn't win a Super Bowl.
He didn't.
No.
And he shouldn't have, because, you know.
What was it, 20, some 32 yard? I don't know. It was short.
It was 40. It was makeable, to be sure.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah. I think it was, you know, maybe 43 or something, but certainly not outside the realm of possibility. But, dude, people miss extra points now, so.
They do. It was 44.
Yeah, that's.
Yeah.
So I think my 43.
Wait a minute. Missed a 47-yard field goal attempt at the end of the game. It was 47 yards.
Right, so not short, but certainly my...
wide right.
My Price is Right rules would have beaten yours because I said 43.
That got Otis Anderson an MVP. Would have been Jimmy Kelly.
Yeah, it would have been.
Who, if anybody, deserved a friggin' ring.
Yeah, I did see a whole thing of, like, you know, if Scott Norwood doesn't go wide right on that, then the Bills the next year come back as defending champions, and it changes the whole mindset of that team.
Probably not, though, because they had to face the Cowboys.
That was difficult.
You know, they went, yeah. I don't know if they played the Cowboys directly after that, but
they did
Washington,
face them twice.
Washington was in there somewhere, too.
They were.
So, but, yeah, rough.
So, anyway, okay, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Ray, and we'll be back in a couple weeks or actually maybe next week even.
Maybe. I don't know. There's not much to talk about.
Right. We're still cogitating about that draft show. We'll see.
Yeah, come on, Brian. Let's do this.
Let's see how that works out.
Let's run it back.
I have to put Brian on my couch for the night for all the beers. All right, bitches, we're out. Enjoy your whatever it is you do, and we'll see you next time we do what we do.
Love you, mean it.